No. Now you know just how stupid and selfish I can be.
Don't say that.
He pulled me into his arms, and I went, gladly enough, letting him enfold me.
You were a child. You wanted to be loved by the people who were supposed to love you.
Don't make excuses for me. His breath was warm against my cheek.
I'm not. But you don't deserve condemnation either.
I fucking hate myself for it.
You shouldn't.
He turned his head and kissed the side of my brow.
There is nothing in you worthy of hate, my Arden. And I'm so sorry I made you tell me that.
I glanced up. I'm not. I mean, it wasn't fun. But I trust you. With the worst of me as well as the best. And all the squishy, ambiguous bits in between.
Thank you.
He said, unexpectedly grave.
I hope to always honor that trust.
As I will for you. He didn't respond. So, you know, I nudged him gently. Your turn. It took a long time, but he did eventually speak. The words coming slowly and painfully like razor blades from his lips.
If I tell you, you'll know what Eleanor said about me is right. That I'm sick and twisted and I ruin everything that's good.
She only said that because she was angry. He shook his head.
No, she said it because it's true. You see, I learned who I was when I was 14 years old.
What happened when... Wait. When your father died?
After that. When I seduced his business partner. His best friend.
I genuinely had no idea what to say. Too much clamoring in my head, nausea churning my stomach, and the memory of Lancaster Stein's cold grey eyes. The way they had lingered on Caspian, possessive and predatory, and cruel. Oh, God, how had I ever thought he was hot? And should I have seen this? Guessed at something like it? At the very least. How fucking stupid and blind and ignorant was I?
You seduced him, I repeated carefully. Yes. I was angry with everyone, especially my mother, who was close to Lancaster then. I felt she was betraying my father.
He uttered a soft laugh, devoid of mirth.
She wasn't. I did that.
For fuck's sake. I was drowning but thrashing doggedly, regardless. I don't see how a 14-year-old could have seduced anyone. He went rigid in my embrace.
You don't believe me?
No, I believe you. But as far as I'm concerned, if an adult sleeps with a child, that's abuse. I waited for him to accept my unassailable logic. But all he gave me was another one of those hollow laughs.
You're so sweet, Arden. But I wasn't a child.
Are you seriously telling me? My voice rose a little. That if I went out and banged a 14-year-old, you would be okay with that? You wouldn't think it was deeply fucked up and wrong?
To say nothing of illegal.
He added for me.
No, of course it would be wrong. But it was different for me. I knew exactly what I was doing.
I suddenly realized I was meant to be comforting him, and instead we were sort of having an argument. But I didn't know how to let it go. Hell, I didn't want to let it go. How could he believe these things? How could he think I would? You were a grieving teenager,
He was an adult, even if you thought you were consenting. It was his responsibility to... Jesus, Caspian! To look after you! Caspian shook me off impatiently and rose. He seemed very tall just then, in his barely rumpled black tie while I huddled, naked in bed.
I know what you're doing. I know this would be more comfortable for you if it was some heart-rending tale of a vulnerable boy and a wicked uncle, but that simply isn't true.
His voice lashed at me and his words hurt. The injustice of them. I wiped away fresh tears with the heel of my hand. It's not about my comfort.
He didn't force me. He didn't rape me. He didn't make me do anything I wasn't willing to do.
He gazed down at me and it was like looking through the bars, caging a wounded beast.
You may be sure I experienced pleasure with him, Arden. On many occasions.
That's still not the same as consent, I said in a small voice.
We were together a long time, beyond any point that would absolve me of responsibility on grounds of age. I could have left him, and I chose not to.
Yes, I protested, because this stuff is complicated. My mum stayed with my dad for years, half believing that if she could only be better and do things right, she could change him back into the wonderful, adoring man she married. He turned on me, almost snarling.
Don't compare me to your mother. It does not reflect well on either of us.
I held his gaze, shaky but committed. You're never going to convince me that a relationship between a 14-year-old boy and a grown man was the 14-year-old's fault.
Then what if I told you how he cultivated my darkest desires, nurtured my cruelty, encouraged my worst impulses, how he taught me and indulged me, and brought me lovers to break like toys?
I'd say he was a sick fuck. Caspian threw back his head and covered his face with his hands. More of that strange laughter bursting from between his fingers.
Now you sound like Nathaniel. But I was no sacrifice to Lancaster's degeneracy. I was his acolyte.
You were his victim. He made a noise of frustration, maybe even anger, and spun away from me.
Stop it! I don't want to hear this!
He curled his hands into his hair.
Why won't you understand? Can't you see I'm ruined and filthy and fucked up? I want the people I love to suffer, because that's what turns me on above all else. Control and pain and degradation.
Yes, I know. I steadied my breathing, tried to meet the storm of his fury and pain with gentleness. You're a sadist and dominant. And yes, you hurt me sometimes.
It's the price of being with me.
Okay. Screw gentle. Let me fucking finish, I yelled. Yes, you've hurt me, but I wanted you to hurt me in the ways you did. It's not a price to me, it's a privilege. I like it. Don't you get it? And if you're going to sit, well, stand there and claim, fucking erroneously, by the way, that a child can meaningfully consent to sex, then you don't have any right to tell me, a full, legal and empowered adult, that I can't consent to control or pain or even degradation from the man I love. Silence came down like steel. I gasped, suddenly breathless.
You should be disgusted by me, said Caspian at last. You should want nothing to do with me.
I swayed exhaustedly where I knelt. Well, I'm not, and I don't. How many times are you going to ignore me telling you that I love you? Because I do, I really do, and you can think all these awful things about yourself if you must, but nothing, nothing, do you hear me, will make me believe them.
You can't love me. You don't know me.
You mean because I didn't know about this? That's only because you lied to me about it. He paced restlessly up and down that pristine room. This lost creature in Caspian Hart's skin.
I didn't lie.
I asked you, outright in Kinloch Bervy.
No. You asked if someone had hurt me, and they haven't.
Oh, fucking hell! I rubbed my hands against my burning eyes. I could have hurt you. Don't you realize how completely fucked it feels looking back at all the times I've pushed you on sex stuff with no clue about what happened to you?
Well,
he drawled.
I did warn you that I'm a cruel and selfish person.
Why didn't you tell me? He paused and gazed down at me with eyes that had nothing in them at all. No light, no warmth, nothing.
Because I didn't want you to know. I wanted you to see me as you did, not as the monster I am.
God, Caspian, you're not a monster. You're an abuse survivor. There was a long, long, increasingly unpleasant silence. Then in his coldest, sternest voice,
"This isn't working. I've enjoyed our time together, but we're done."
Wait, what? But it was too late. He turned on his heel and was fucking gone. I threw myself out of bed and pulled on the nearest pair of pajama bottoms. Ran after Caspian into the hall. What the fuck? I cried. Seriously, what the fuck was that? Caspian's attention flicked my way. He was utterly calm, but there was something terrible about it. Like shatterproof glass, holding its shape when it's nothing but cracks. You're leaving me because I won't tell you you're evil.
No, Arden. I'm leaving you because you want me to believe things I cannot believe. Accept things I cannot accept. Be someone I cannot be.
No. No, this couldn't be happening. The world had gone slow and watery. I felt like he'd hit me. Except, you know, inside. Right where there was nothing to protect my most naked, tender parts. Tears were slipping down my cheeks and stinging the corners of my lips. That's not true. I just want you to see that you're kinky, not twisted, and hurt, not broken.
You may use the flat for as long as you like, he said. And if you need money,
shut up about the fucking flat and your fucking money!
Very well.
Oh, God. How could he look so perfect? Arranging his cuffs like he was goddamn stock art. Handsome young businessman in formal wear, adjusting sleeves while standing in luxury interior. And I still couldn't quite believe this was happening. Except Caspian was walking away from me. I lunged after him and caught his arm, spun him round, gazed up at him pleadingly, my eyes heavy and my face hot and wet and sticky from crying. I don't understand.
There's nothing to understand.
His expression didn't change. His tone gave me nothing.
I can't do this, Arden.
Please, can't we?
I thought you would hate me, and there could be nothing worse. Instead, you pity me, and that I cannot bear. I will not have you make me weak.
Very gently he peeled my hand away. Turned. Walked. My skin burned from his already fading touch. Caspian? He paused. I could barely speak, my mouth was so full of tears, and my heart this helpless lump of rubbery meat flopping in my chest. Can you promise me one more thing.
I very much doubt it.
Can you maybe think about seeing a counselor? Nobody should feel the way you do. He half turned, his face all shadows and blade-sharp angles.
How I feel is not your concern.
You need to talk to someone. Please give yourself that.
Therapy is not a magic spell. But for your information, Nathaniel arranged for me to see someone when we were together.
Really?
Yes.
And you did it?
Weekly, for over a year.
My head was full of white noise. Every breath I took snapped like icicles in my throat. Well, you know something. Whoever you saw, they did a piss-poor job. The door opened, closed, and that was it. We were done. Chapter 29. Everything hurt. The hours were wild horses. Dawn broke around me. I spent most of the day on the sofa, crying myself out of tears, watching the sky turn tauntingly through shades of silver and gold. I tried to be brave, to be strong, to be less fucking pathetically embarrassing. But my inner Scarlet O'Hara was AWOL. Tomorrow being another day seemed scant fucking consolation. And while I sometimes tormented myself with idle fantasies of Caspian coming back, of sweeping me into his arms full of sorrow and declarations of eternal devotion, I knew it wasn't going to happen. I wasn't sure I could ever bear pain like this again. Later. 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 My phone bleeped. And, like a fool, I scrabbled for it, wrecked with hope, with fear, with hope. It was Nick. I moved my foot. I slept and didn't sleep, and the hours sped and sluggished by. And finally I rang home. Hazel picked up. "What's wrong?" she said before I even had a chance to speak. I took a deep breath, then another. Terrified of saying it, of making it real, of breaking the strange still twilight of my grief. He left me. It was all I managed before I started crying again. The line crackled as Hazel shouted, "Rabbi, get the car!" And then to me, "You sit tight, Ardy. We're on our way." I didn't tell them they didn't need to come. Because they did. They really, really did. The next day I took a shower. The water hardly touched me, it just ran over my body. Afterward I put clothes on. Because I vaguely remembered that was the sort of thing people did. Text from Rabbi. "Nearly there." They must have driven for 12 hours straight. It didn't take me long to pack. I briefly considered breaking everything in the apartment, but then I didn't. I rang Belrose. "I'm moving out." "Arden?" "I'll leave the phone and the credit cards and everything on the table." I sounded weird, even to me. Like one of those Star Trek episodes where a crew member gets taken over by an alien brain parasite. "All right. And thanks for, you know, I was simply doing my job. You don't have to thank me." "Well, I just did, motherfucker." He made a sound that might have been a laugh. "I'm sorry. I'm not the most socially adept of people."
You don't come across as socially inept. You come across as really mean. I'm that too. He paused. In any case, you have been... That is, you are... A person in my life toward whom I did not feel... Complete revulsion. You what? Keep my number. The line went dead. I thought about calling Nick, but I wasn't ready to talk and he had enough going on. I texted Ellery, though. No way I was letting her find me gone for the second time. I was standing on the pavement with my bags at my feet when Rabbi and Hazel arrived. The car, which looked dingy in Kinloch Bearvie, looked borderline derelict in the middle of Kensington. But I'd never been so fucking relieved to see it. We were strictly business. No questions asked, just getting my stuff piled into the boot. And then Hazel and Rabbi swapped sides and I crawled into the back seat. One of Mum's quilts was waiting for me there, and never mind it was the middle of summer. Never mind the glass ricocheting sun glare. Never mind that it was already stifling in the car. I wrapped myself up tight as tight. And I swear to God I could smell the sea. And then we were off. Hazel opened the glove box and her dusty jumble of CDs clattered onto her lap. What have we got then? Lord of the Rings, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, Winnie the Pooh, The Code of the Woosters, Murder Must Advertise with the Last Disc Missing. I thought about it a moment. Lord of the Rings, please. The familiar music washed over me, and then the equally familiar words.
Long years ago, in the Second Age of Middle-earth, the elven smiths of Eregion forged rings of great power.
I closed my eyes. I was home. Hazel must have texted ahead, because when we wheezed into Kinloch Bearvie, some 12 or 13 hours later, Mum was waiting for me on the doorstep, and I dived straight into her arms. I spent a lot of time in the attic room, Mum's room, curled up in the bed under the eaves. The first place I'd spent the night with Caspian Heart. I listened to the whispers of the sea, caught the dapple of the fairy lights in my cupped hands, and cried and ached and grieved. Tried to let Caspian go. Honestly, I wanted to hate him. But how could I when he already hated himself? And with such unassailable fervor that he'd rather believe he was a monster than accept he could be hurt. I'd probably watched too much Disney. But wasn't love supposed to be strong? Except I'd loved and loved and loved. Loved with all my heart. And lost long ago. Every night Mum came in with our old copy of Father Brown. Read to me until I fell asleep. Just like when we used to wait for my dad to come home. It was weird at first. Not having to whisper. Not having anyone to fear. Eventually I remembered there were things I should have been getting on with. I was starting a new job in a couple of weeks. A job I'd been incredibly happy and proud to get. And I had nowhere to live. So I sat down with Rabbi, and he helped me figure out my tax bracket and what my take-home pay would be, and all that stuff. I thought I could stretch to around 7, or at a push, 800 a month for rent. And still leave enough for grown-up things like bills and travel and food and toothpaste. Not much for fun, though. But I guess this was life when you weren't dating a billionaire.
In any case, I thought 800 quid a month would be loads. I wasn't expecting to move into a palace or anything, but I thought it might stretch to a nice little apartment somewhere. That could, hypothetically, look similar to the one Sarah Jessica Parker had in Sex and the City. Unfortunately, I hadn't quite accounted for London, and the fact I wasn't the quirky protagonist of an American TV show. It turned out there were garages, and not even nice garages, beyond my budget. And the only residential properties I could afford were spurious house shares or dreary little studio flats. Places with only one or two pictures on Right Move, usually a bare mattress jammed against a stucco wall, or an exterior shot of a concrete block, or, in particularly dire cases, a photo of the loo. Seriously, those were the best images somebody could find. I mean, maybe if I'd been an Elizabethan time traveller, the fact I didn't have to poo out of the window would have been a major wow factor. But, child of the post-Basil Jet era that I was inclined to take indoor plumbing for granted. Oh, God. Caspian had spoiled me. He'd made ordinary life look really rubbish, and left me stranded between worlds. Alone. I was sitting on the swing, swaying in a desultory fashion, and watching the horizon eat the waves. And then the back door opened. My heart shattered like someone had thrown a rock through it. But it was Ellery who stepped into the garden. She clomped toward me, hands in the pockets of her hoodie. Scotland suited her, made her eyes as clear as the sky and the sea. "What are you doing here?" I asked, surprised I was even capable of speech. "Taking in an exhibition at the Tate Modern." She heaved an exasperated sigh. "Came to see you, dipshit." "You didn't have to do that." She shrugged. "Guess Caspian fucked you over, huh?" For a moment or two I didn't say anything. The wind was sharp and salty clean like the first sip of an exceptional margarita. It felt simply good to breathe. Let the air scour you. "Well, we're not together anymore. You're better off without him. I don't think it's a question of better or worse. But not being with him hurts." I toed the ground, pushing myself a little higher. "You know about Lancaster Stein, don't you?"
"Yeah."
"They didn't even try to hide that shit from me." "But none of it was Caspian's fault. You get that, right? He was young and vulnerable and messed up, and betrayed by someone he trusted in the worst way possible." Another Ellery shrug. "Sure." "Sure? Is that all you can say?" My voice cracked, and suddenly I was back at One Hyde Park with Caspian, losing him all over again. "What the fuck do you want from me?" "I don't know. Understanding. A little compassion, maybe." "Screw compassion. I mean, if what happened to him was so terrible, why wouldn't he put a stop to it now?"
"What do you mean?"
She gave a nasty laugh. "Oh, come on, Arden. He's probably already with him. He always goes back to Lancaster." I stopped swinging. I wasn't going to cry. I wasn't going to cry anymore. Ellery's hand brushed my shoulder briefly. "He's fucked up. He fucks everyone up. I'm sorry. He's so unhappy," I mumbled. "You're not the first person to try and fix him. I just wanted to be with him." I leaned into her, and while she made an irritated noise, she didn't move away.
And it seems cruel beyond reckoning that a man with such power over his world could have so little over himself. She rolled her eyes.
Yeah, tragically ironic. And you know what else is tragically ironic?
What?
The fact you're sitting here in the arse end of Scotland with nothing and nowhere to go, and probably no clue about anything, trying to make me feel bad for the guy who treated you like shit.
Hey, now! I protested. He offered me money and the apartment.
Like you were going to take it.
How long was he with you? Did he know you at all?
We were kind of in the middle of an argument at the time.
Right, but it's been over a week.
It had. And I told myself I wasn't hoping for anything. Except I must have been. Because now I felt silly.
Ellery kicked the tree moodily. Stop feeling sorry for him. I expect he's feeling sorry enough for himself. Or Lancaster's found him a new whipping boy.
Don't!
Sorry. Did you really come all the way to Kinloch Bearvey to say I told you so?
No.
She pulled her hood up and disappeared into its shadows.
I came to ask if you want to live with me.
I nearly fell off the swing.
Live with you?
Yeah.
Thought I should move out. Do some shit with my life or something.
What sort of shit did you have in mind? She kicked the tree again, and then, apparently finding the shelter of the hood inadequate, caught the strings and yanked them so tight that only a tiny window was left for her face.
Thought I might go Bartok on some English folk songs. Try to bring them back into the popular consciousness, or whatever.
How?
Well, I thought I'd start by playing them.
I gazed at her, slightly shocked.
That sounds amazing.
Right. I found one about baby murdering.
Wow.
Yes. People need that in their lives. I clutched my chest. How can we as a culture have let our baby murder songs whirl away upon the slipstreams of time? She made an odd muffled noise. I think she might have been laughing.
Is that a yes, then?
Do you even have a house for me to move into?
Yeah, I do. Just bought it. Although it's not exactly a house. It's more of a space.
Oh, dear God. I was going to end up living in a disused power plant or a disused tube station. You should charge me rent, though.
Hell yes, I will.
She emerged slightly from her hoodie.
I'm not Caspian. You don't get to pay me in sex.
I gave an outraged squeak.
That was not our arrangement. Rent $7.50 a month. Bills included.
It was so perfect for me, I suspected she'd put far more thought into it than her manner suggested.
That seems unreasonably reasonable for London.
Yeah, well, it's going to need some renovation. And there'll be a lot of baby murdering songs happening.
I guess I'm in.
She gave me a flat look.
Okay, then.
You know what this means, right? Now her gaze became distinctly wary.
No. What?
Hug time. I bounced off the swing.
Oh, don't. Do you have to?
She grumbled, but she let me hold her. Even gave me a brief grudging squeeze in return. And afterward we sat on the grass together. Watch the sunset crack the sky like an egg, spilling gold and scarlet and purple across the shifting waves. I still felt miserable, lessened, turned into ribbons of myself.
thin enough for the light to shine through. But I also knew I was going to be okay. Maybe not today, or tomorrow, or even the day after that. Probably not for a long time. But it was there, waiting for me, just a step beyond the horizon. When Caspian left me, I thought I'd lost so much that I'd lost everything. Except I'd found something, too. A piece of truth. As smooth and bright as sea glass. For all his wealth and power and beauty, I had something Caspian Heart would never have. Would never be able to accept. It was the simplest thing in the world, and the most precious. I knew I was loved. This has been a Hachette Audio production of How to Blow It with a Billionaire, written by Alexis Hall, read by Joel Leslie, post-production by Listen Up. How to Blow It with a Billionaire is also available in print and as an ebook from Forever Yours, an imprint of Grand Central Publishing, a division of Hachette Book Group. For more Hachette Audio productions, visit us at hachetteaudio.com. Thank you for listening. Text copyright 2017 by Alexis Hall. Audio production copyright 2018 Hachette Audio. All rights reserved. Hachette Book Group supports the right to free expression and the value of copyright. The purpose of copyright is to encourage writers and artists to produce the creative works that enrich our culture. The duplicating, uploading and distribution of this audiobook without permission is a theft of the author's intellectual property. If you would like permission to use material from the audiobook, other than for review purposes, please contact permissions@hbgusa.com. Thank you for your support of the author's rights. This audiobook is a work of fiction. Names, characters, places, and incidents are either the product of the author's imagination or are used fictitiously. And any resemblance to actual persons, living or dead, events or locales is entirely coincidental.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.